What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live, as always, from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. I'm in here with my co-host, man, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spread Star, are you today?
Man, I'm hanging in there. It's I've begun to doing a lot. You know, I told you guys, I think before, that I'm in the house process of buying and selling a home. And I'm running on fumes right now, Five Star, but I'm ready to discuss some sports.
Man, we appreciate you being in it. My guy's really tired, man. He's been up getting things ready, man, for a big move in his life, man. We appreciate him making time for all of us in the Wagering World. And then we got, man, a friend of the show. Man, he's here every year, usually more often. This year he's been so busy with BetUS, man. We're so glad to have him in here, man. I call him the mayor of Philly, man. This is my sweet brother, Noopsy, Alex Noops Christensen. How you doing, brother?
It's a beautiful day in the world today. It's always great being with you guys talking about betting. Hopefully we'll be back together in Vegas sometime soon. But we got one more football game. The NBA is cruising. Tennis continues to tennis. It's the best.
Yeah, man, it's a good time of the year, man. And we can't complain. Even though we get tired, man, we can never get mad for what we do, man. We take part in something that a lot of guys wish that they had the ability to do. And that's work on your own time, man. And also enjoy, you know, watching sports and making money from it, man. Real quick, before we get into the pass spread, I meant to ask you the last game, and I'm glad the Noops is on here as well, because a couple guys DM'd me on X and wanted me to address this. The last play that was kind of, it wasn't the last play of the game. It was one of the more deciding plays in the game, probably the most important play in the game besides Mahomes making a pass to Perrine to get the first down. Josh Allen on fourth down, do you blame the play where he throws the miracle pass that still somehow gets to Kincaid when he had a bad read on the call? Do you blame that play on Josh Allen? Did he misread the coverage, or do you say great call by Steve Spagnuolo? Y'all start with our guest, Noops, first.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I blame the last three possessions. I mean, to put yourself in the fourth and long there, to have to make that kind of miracle play, you know, what happened on those first few drives? Why weren't those first few plays? Why weren't they able to get a couple yards to get that to fourth and manageable? I mean, Josh Allen, you look at the play, and a lot of people have broken it down. One of my buddies, Ben Solak, has taken a lot of flack for asking Josh Allen to make a throw that apparently was pretty hard. You know, if you look at that play, basically Allen takes the ball, rolls to the right, has his back to the left side of the field, where if he was able to, I guess, do a pirouette and throw the ball in one motion, he could have hit Khalil Shakir. But I think it's tough. I think Allen made a good throw. I think Kincaid probably should have caught that ball and probably does catch that ball more often than not. But again, I think it's kudos to Spagnuolo on that defense. And I got to really wonder, you're the Bills. I'd be spending all offseason looking at that drive, trying to figure out what went wrong. So we had to be in fourth, whatever it was, way longer than you want to be.
Yeah. And great point by you, Noops. And your guy was right on point, and all these pros were coming after him. And the reason why, man, is favoritism. They're just boys with Josh Allen. They weren't going out their way to go talk to him about the Lamar Jackson play and Mark Andrews dropping the ball. You know, it's just that buddy system stuff. You know, these guys that write, they take a liking to certain guys and the way they play the game, and, you know, they use their platform for that. Me personally, I think that your boy was right. He was exactly right, because if you watched the Bills play this year, that was one of their go-to plays with the orbit reverse. And the first option supposed to be on that play is Shakir. But the thing is, Josh Allen, he called his protection wrong. He said it in the press conference. So they slid the wrong way. That's why he had pressure on him immediately and he panicked. But if he would have just trusted his guys and trusted his keys, which was Shakir's my guy, he's in space. But what also happened on that play, Spagnuolo is so damn smart. He sent the blitz, but he gave him combo coverage. So it looked like he was going to be in zone where they'd have their eyes in the backfield and see him catch the ball and come up and make the tackle. But they played like it was zone at the snap, and then they bailed into man with the corner. The linebacker stayed zone, so Shakir was his guy. But, man, they was really confused. You have to have some really quick thinking to get up. So, I'd say Spagnuolo, but I also say Josh Allen. One, get into the right protection. Two, trust your keys. You know that on this play, you're supposed to go to Shakir. Trust him to make a play for you in the flats. He could, I think it was a 9 yard, 8 or 9 yard fourth down. I think he could have got it when you look back at the film. But they're wrong for coming at your boy, because he's telling the truth. What did you think about that play, Spread?
So for the play personally, I think you broke it down. I'm not going to add any of that, but I just want to point out we do have this tendency to do reductive analysis when it comes to these big games. If you went into the film session after the game, you know, I don't know if the Bills will have one, but the Chiefs, they're not just looking at two plays and then, okay, film session's over. They go through every single play and there's things that they can improve all the time. So, the reductive analysis that it comes down to one play. And I talked about this with Mark Andrews last week. Yes, he should have caught that ball, but that wasn't the sole reason they lost. And, you know, he's not the only one to blame. I kind of feel that's the same way here. Obviously, they had a lot to improve, and I think you broke it down a lot better than I could. But the idea that it was just simply that play that caused them to lose, I think is kind of made for and hey, we do it too here on this show, right? People tune in because they want to hear us react to the game, and we can't go through every single play. But there's a lot more that went into it than just that play.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I just had to hit that because a couple guys had reached out to me because I was kind of having a little back and forth with a couple of Bills fans about it because they were saying that Shakir was not the number one read and that they were in zones. I mean, that's why he did that. But actually, they were man-to-man, and this was a great scheme by Spagnuolo. And if you look at the intricacies of that defensive call, it's one of the reasons why Spagnuolo's a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. He had the DN drop into zone coverage on the right side while they stayed in zone on the top side that he rolled to. And then on the backside, they went man-to-man with their corner, Jaylen Warren, and left the linebacker in zone. So just really intricate play calling, intricate design, man. So it would have confused a lot of people. I think that Josh Allen just showed how great a player he was by even making that play after he messed up with the protection and the blitz got there and still put it in Kincaid's hands. I only think him and Mahomes can make that play in the entire NFL. Let's jump in the past real quick, Spread. Right now, Noof, we'll go over a couple of the plays we had for the last show. Great last show, Spread. We cleaned the board.
Yes, we did. Let's go ahead and jump right in. We'll get you victory lap on the first two. Houston covers at West Virginia, and the first half play is the one we gave out. That one got home. What'd you see there?
Just the same thing we talked about. We're not going to stay on these long, man. Houston is just a juggernaut. They play the same way. If you love basketball, you like to watch the Rockets, and you like to watch the Houston Cougars play because they play ball the right way. They play defense. They hustle. They rebound. They get offensive rebounds, and they shoot the three. So great job by Kelvin Sampson. Those guys never was a sweat.
All right, the next one you gave out was Wisconsin at Maryland. I didn't track that one at all. Just saw the money.
Good. That's always a good thing when you just look up in the money there, right, Spread? Yeah, man. So we were able to cash that one. Maryland started out slow. We knew it was going to be a tough game. Wisconsin actually won the first half, man. So I'm glad we went the whole game on that one. As the game went on, we saw that Maryland just was a tougher team. Great game by their guard, Jacoby Gillespie. Great game again by Angel Reese's little brother, man. He's a real baller, man. He'll be in the NBA playing in no time. Kevin Williams continues to improve the Maryland Terrapins. I think they're going to make a Sweet 16 run at least in the tournament.
All right, let's move to the NBA, and I'll start with you here, Noops. Noops, did you check out the Denver Nuggets taking on the New York Knicks the other night? The New York Knicks got the win. I gave them out at -3. Just quick review of my breakdown, even though I do think Denver's probably got a better chance to win the championship. New York's playing better right now, and that home court advantage meant too much. Did you see that game? And also just give your overall thoughts, because we haven't talked to you, just on the outlook for those two teams this year. To me, it seems like in the East, we're down to a three-team race. And the West is still wide open. What were your thoughts on the Denver Nuggets and the New York Knicks?
It was a really fun game to watch. It's just amazing that the one guy who seems to give Nikola Jokic trouble is someone in Karl-Anthony Towns who, you know, with all due respect, is not really a great defender by a lot of different metrics. There is something about the way he plays that make Jokic uncomfortable. What I will say in that game was I had the under there, and I would suggest that people continue to look towards Denver Nuggets unders. Now, they've been one of the best over teams all season, but as we get through this part of the NBA season, you guys know this as well as anybody. this is a slog. Everyone is trying to get through the next few weeks to get to the All-Star break so they can take some time, recover, go on vacation, relax here a little bit. Pace across the league has dropped. Offensive efficiency across the league has dropped. And with the Nuggets specifically, a team that was at a pace about 101, 102 through the first part of the season, you look at the last 15 games, they're down below 99. That makes a big difference in total. So I've been looking sort of towards their unders. As for, you know, kind of the future and looking ahead for both of these teams, the Knicks are really good, but I'm just not sure if they're on the same level as Boston and Cleveland. Those are, to me, the top two teams in the East. The Knicks, again, could beat them. I really could see that happening, but it really does feel like Boston and Cleveland are going to be one of the final representatives there for the Eastern Conference. As for the Nuggets, I love Nikola Jokic. He continues to just change what it means to have great seasons. He somehow finds more ways to be efficient every year after setting records for efficiency time and time again. I just worry about that Denver Nuggets team and how much work they're going to have to do to get through the season, basically. You remember, I think it was last year, really, defending the title. Just had to put too many minutes on Jokic, and we saw they really sort of fell apart at the end of the year. So they've got to find a way to get up into the top three, four seeds and find a way to give these guys a little bit of a break at the end of the year. But I think both of these teams are definitely going to be dark horse contenders, if you will, to beat some of those higher seeded teams above them.
Five Star, did you have eyes on that game?
Yeah, of course I did, because we betted. We took the Knicks first half and for the game. Got a little tight the second half. Knicks were able to pull it out in the first half. I just like the Knicks' efficiency, man. I've been calling for Carl Anthony Towns. You know, that spread on the show forever that we were saying that we hoped he went to New York and that New York would be a good spot for him, and that also that Ant-Man would, you know, also do well from him leaving so he can go ahead and take the leadership role and doesn't have to defer to Cat, because that was his boy. Ant's a good dude, and him and Cat's a really good dude. So he liked each other, but it also made it where it wasn't a clear big dog in the locker room, and now it's Ant, and now Carl Anthony Towns is in a great position to be a 1B over here with Jalen Brunson. I look forward to seeing the Knicks in the playoffs, man. I know that Tibbs runs a lot of the same guys for high minutes. He's still doing it, but these are three iron men he has in Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart. I'd say that Anunoby is also an Iron Man. You know, he has some injuries, but when he plays, he does play high minutes. Really good player. He's one of the most underrated players in the league, man. I really like OG, man. But I like the Knicks, man. I think the Knicks can beat Cleveland in a series. I don't know about Boston, but Cleveland is so small, man. I know it looks good right now, but I don't know how they're going to do in the playoffs. But great cash for us on that one.
All right, and if Adam Silver gets his way and we go to 40 minutes, being the sixth man on the Knicks might be like being the backup quarterback, right? I mean, you just hold a clipboard and you play like three plays a game. I just wanted to throw that little joke out there. Noobs, I didn't watch this one, but just your overall thoughts on the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Phoenix Suns. I actually didn't watch the game, but I just love to hear your thoughts on how these teams.
Two teams that are very similar in that things are not going the way they had hoped. This Minnesota team, I think they did expect to take a step backward. That Carl Anthony Towns, clearly financially driven, you know, basically with the way the salary cap is now set up with your first and second apron. If they were going to have Carl Anthony Towns on this team, there was just no flexibility for them, no way for them to really do anything. And again, as much as I think they expected to take a step back, not this far back. I mean, we're talking about basically a 500 basketball team in the Minnesota Timberwolves that does not really have any defining feature. Last year, it was a defensive team with occasional offensive brilliance from Anthony Edwards. The offense is average. The defense is average. I just don't see an identity here. And I see a lot of that same thing with the Phoenix Suns. Now, Budenholzer has done a good job of changing the lineup. That has actually helped them quite a bit. But they still look to me like a slightly above average team. I don't see how this group of guys over a seven-game series is going to be able to beat anybody in the Western Conference here. So two teams that I'm curious to see what they can do with the deadline. Again, Minnesota has some flexibility thanks to those offseason trades. Phoenix doesn't. There is not really moves for Phoenix to be made. You know, everyone keeps talking about the Beal Butler trade, and that's simply because the way the rules work now, Phoenix has spent so much money that they can only make one-for-one player trades with basically the exact amount of money. So just not a lot of flexibility here, and I'd be really worried about both teams.
Yeah, and we were talking about the other day, and I didn't jump in the chat that day, Noobs, but I would argue Bradley Beal is the worst contract in the NBA. Noobs, final thought here. if one of these two teams were to end up in the NBA Finals, which one would you think has the better shot of actually overcoming everything and winning?
I would have to go with Phoenix. I think that their highest level is a little bit higher than Minnesota's highest level, if you will. And when you get to the playoffs, having depth isn't really as important. And when you get down to Phoenix's top eight guys, I think it sort of fits. I think bringing in Nick Richards has given them enough at center. Basically, them and Plumlee can hold it down for 48 minutes. So if Booker, Durant, Beal, all those guys can be healthy with Tyus Jones, with Ryan Dunn, you've got, I think, enough interesting pieces there where, again, every Minnesota Timberwolves game I watch, they just look lost. I don't know what's going on there. Just about everybody but Anthony Edwards has taken a step back there this year.
Julius Randle fit did not work as well as they envisioned. Five-star, your thoughts on the T-Wolves and the...
Well, I played this game. I told you we were going to play Minnesota. Just as I said, Anthony Edwards looked up to Kevin Durant growing up, and every time he plays him, he's going to give it to him. And they were able to come back in the second half and end up winning the games outright. So we were able to get the cover on that one. Also, we went over on Anthony Edwards' points because he's always motivated when he plays Phoenix, and he was able to get 33 points and get to that. Just a little side note for me, I just want to tell Phoenix Suns GM James Jones, stop calling Raphael Stone. We're not going to bail you guys out. We're not going to make the same mistake you guys did in 2021. And destroy our core, which is a really good young core, 7 deep, just to help you get out the KD mess and the Booker mess and the Beal mess that you're in. So stop calling Houston. We're not trading with you guys.
All right, yeah. And, Noops, you kind of hit it on the head. I think with the new salary cap rules and that second apron, the big three, the idea of a big three is dead. The new way to make a team is two top guys and surround them with well-paid role players that do their job. Finally, Jill Teichman. I did not see that match, Five-Star. I've had a lot going on.
Was able to get it done, Spread. Just a strong 2-0 win for her. We were able to cash that one pretty, so I was really happy for that.
Noops, have you been watching any of the tennis? And any thoughts on Jill Teichman or just the tennis world in general right now? You know, I was happy to see Grand Slam Keys finally do it.
I know there was nobody happier for Matty Slam than you, Spread. It was one of those things where just an incredible run. Arguably one of the most impressive Grand Slam wins we've ever seen. To beat Elena Rybakina, to beat Iga Swiatek and Aryna Sabalenka in the same event is one of the most impressive things you'll ever see, especially with someone who is, again, a little bit more of a veteran, you know, probably a little bit closer to the end than her beginning of her career, and coming off such a great run. You know, we rarely see players start the season like this, winning back-to-back titles. It's just a lot to ask, so that was really fun. Overall, the tennis has been great. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Tennis is the best betting sport in the world. 20 hours a day, 11 months a year. Someone somewhere is playing tennis, and we can bet on it. And I'm so excited to see Jill Teichman. She was someone a couple seasons ago we loved to bet, especially on slower hard courts, on clay courts. She was someone that really, in these smaller kind of tournaments, was grinding down better players and just checked out. I don't know what was the last season was for her. It was just kind of a mess. So happy to see someone that I like betting on. I like her game. She has a good mental fortitude. It's just great to see her playing winning tennis, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, speaking of you saying 20 hours a day to bet, I just won with Jesper DeJong this morning on plus money against his countryman Greek Spor, and I also hit Muhova in the third set and ended up Potapova tied it up and then won the second set. I was able to get a lovely number, like -140. We knew Muhova was gonna be able to outlast Potapova. So as you said, the best sport to bet in the world is tennis, and we love it over here at the Wagering World. All right, Spread, let's get to the present.
Another popular sport to bet, of course, is college basketball, and you have a breakdown for us right now. Start with Indiana.
Tonight we got Indiana, man, visiting Purdue. You know, these are rivalries, both from the basketball state, from the Hoosier state, you know, where basketball began in America. Two teams going opposite directions, in my opinion. Records are very similar, but I just think the Purdue has been playing a much better game inside of the Big Ten than Indiana, man. 8-2 in the last 10, 7-3 against the spread, whereas Indiana, man, are 6-4, but they're 5-5 against the spread. Two tough losses against Maryland and Northwestern. They lost, actually, four of their last five games, and they're going to play a Purdue team that's really good at home. They just blew out Michigan, man, by 30 points And I expect similar to the same tonight. You know how we say on this show, Spread, that if the line looks fun, it's probably money. 12 and a half is a lot of points for Purdue to be laying against a rival. So with that said, give me Purdue. We're going to lay the minus 12 and a half at home. I just don't like how Indiana's playing currently, and I think that Purdue's going to get on them and run up the score.
I mean, who would have thought we live in a world where the Indiana football team is better than the Indiana basketball team? Let's talk about some of the games on Saturday. The Florida Gators, they'll be taking on the Volunteers. Tennessee laying 2.5.
Yeah, this is a real good matchup, top 10 matchup right here. 18-2 for Florida on the year. They got their coach from University of San Francisco, young guy, man. He's doing a really good job over there. They just beat Georgia by 30, went on the road and won a real close one in South Carolina. You got Tennessee coming off two losses, so it's a short number. The books are telling you that they think that Florida's going to stay in it. But to be safe, I'll just play the money line on this one. I do think that Tennessee wins at home. They've won their last seven straight at home against Florida, and I don't think that that ends here. They're really desperate for a win right here. And Tennessee's one of those teams that are looking to be in the Final Four at the end of the year. So I think this is a big one, big conference game. Give me Tennessee money line. I'll pay the juice at minus 150.
Oh, all right. Not taking the points there, taking the money line. Missouri taking on Mississippi State. Mississippi State at home laying 5.5. What do we do?
Mississippi State is a good team. They pushed Alabama right to the edge. Missouri has been playing really good, man. They're solidly one of the better teams in the SEC this year. Really good coach over there. 83-75 win against Mississippi was really impressive. Now they take on the other team from Mississippi, this time on the road. On the road, Missouri has been decent. You look at their record, man, they went to some tough spots and played really good. They won at Florida, covered against Auburn on the road, lost by 3 points against Illinois on the road, lost by to Texas. That was surprising to me. They were upset by Texas on the road. Mississippi State at home has been solid this year. As I said, though, they just came off a loss to Alabama. In this situation right here, I just think that those points are telling you that they think it's going to be a close game. And once again, I trust Missouri's coach to keep this game close. I also like the transfers over in Missouri. So give me Missouri in the points in this one. 5.5 is just too much.
Another 5.5-point favorite when Ole Miss hosts Auburn. How do you see that game going down?
This one is going to be a good game, man. I'm a big fan of Mississippi's coach, man. I really like him. He came from Texas Tech at first, Coach Beard. Chris Beard, he was at Texas Tech, went to the Final Four with a team that wasn't that good, but he had Terrence Shannon, who later on we saw was a star at Illinois. It's crazy because college now, you got all – it's like the players and coaches move every year now. It's a lot to keep up with, man. There's so much transferring going on. But after that, Chris Beard went to Texas, and he got in some trouble got into a situation with his girlfriend or something, man, and ended up the charges were dropped. But after he got arrested, you know how that is, and – in this world nowadays, everybody's guilty until proven innocent, so they took his job from him. So went to Ole Miss and kind of revived that program, putting it on the map. I think that they're a really solid team, but they're facing a juggernaut in Auburn, man. Auburn is one of those teams, man, that they can score on anybody. One of the few teams that really gave it to the University of Houston, and University of Houston plays really, really strong defense. I just think that Auburn's just a little too much right now at this stage for Ole Miss. Ole Miss does play well at home, but man, I don't see them being able to stop Auburn from putting up points. I also would lean the over on this game, but I'll lay the points with Auburn in this one.
One of the best rivalries in college basketball has its next chapter this weekend when North Carolina heads to Duke. However, five-star, this spread isn't as close as we usually get. Yeah. Usually it's just pick the winner. Duke's laying 13.5.
Yeah, that's too many points for me, Spread. It's no way that I can give up in a rivalry game like this, 14 points, especially when you got kids. Duke's whole starting lineup is mostly freshmen, man. So North Carolina has a couple of veterans starting for them, man. I know they haven't performed as we expected, and a lot of it's probably Hubert Davis. He isn't that good of a coach, man, and if we're going to just be honest about it. And I don't know how long he's able to last. I know he's, you know, Roy's guy, Roy Williams, good buddy that was on the bench with him, but maybe it's time for North Carolina to kind of consider breaking the tree branch and going off and doing something different. because just look at their school. The brand is amazing, man. They could get anyone to coach over there. So I think North Carolina needs to really consider moving off Hubert Davis. But as far as in this game here, it's no way with these two rivals that I'm going to lay that many points. I just got to live with it. If they beat them by 15 points, oh well. But I'm taking the points with North Carolina anytime these two face off, and it's more than double digits. And I got guys like R.J. Davis on North Carolina team who's played Duke 4 years and beat them several times before. He has a lot of confidence. He's going to play his best on them. And nowadays, with the betting world being so popular, you can best believe North Carolina knows that they're 14.5-point dogs. I wouldn't be surprised if they're a live dog money line as well, because, as I said, Duke is still kids, man. They're a really good team, but they're still young, and young kids have breakdowns and are going to have lapses in play. So give me North Carolina plus the points.
All right, Noobs, and I'm glad you're here, because as you can see about how tired I am, I haven't done my usual prep for the NBA, so you can help me out here. Let's talk about – I do know this is one of the most exciting matchups, so athlete-wise, Giannis and Victor on the same floor, to me, two of the most impressive athletes in the NBA. The Spurs are catching 2.5 at home. I did do a little bit, so I know that they're 4-1 against the spread in their last five games hosting Milwaukee. However, San Antonio has not been very good. So they're probably catching a lot more points than 2.5 when they're running up that little NBA betting trend. Noobs, what are your thoughts on the Bucks and the Spurs overall for the season and also when they face?
Yeah, it's an incredible matchup. And, you know, as someone that is hypothetically the same species as Victor Wembanyama and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around that. I mean, you're talking about two of the just, and I mean freak athletes. I mean, Giannis basically gets drafted. He's this scrawny little 6'8" kid from Greece, pops up to his listed height of 6'11", but it's one of my favorite things in the NBA. Some guys just don't want to be listed at 7 feet. Kevin Garnett was famous for this for years, would constantly be standing taller than Greg Ostertag, and a lot of guys who are 7 feet tall still at 6'11". Giannis has got to be at least 7'1", comes into the league, and just a great story, exactly what you want to see. Gets better every year, adds more tools to his tool chest every single season. Wembanyama starts as a much more polished product, but again, just incredible. We're only going to get to watch these two guys play each other so many times. And as sick as it makes me to say this, guys, and you know this already, I can't believe I'm going to do this. I'm going to back Glenn Rivers on the road here. this Bucks team, wow. I had this close to like a 4.5-5-point game. And then really it comes down to two teams that are kind of moving in different directions. The Bucks, really tough start to the season, have finally gotten themselves together. Part of that is they're healthy. You know, Dame's not on the injury report every game. Giannis, he's listed as probable, but he's playing. So is Middleton. They finally figured out that lineup. Coming off a loss here, a pretty embarrassing loss in Portland the other night, honestly. Was happy to fade the Bucks then, but again, I think this is a good spot. We know Rivers teams tend to struggle against bad teams, but especially in look-ahead spots, I think we're going to get the absolute best effort we can out of Milwaukee. And I look at this Spurs team, which is very exciting. I think a pretty clear favorite to pick up De'Aaron Fox from your Sacramento Kings there, spread. Should be a really fun team. But you look over the last couple weeks, they're just not playing as well. And as we talked about earlier in the show, the NBA season is a slog. It is really hard to get through these 82 games. And a young team like the Spurs just doesn't have a lot of experience with being in this part of the season where they're trying to make it to the All-Star break, especially after spending a week in France. It's got to be tough here. So the market, as far as I can tell, has not adjusted the Spurs down. I have. I got this closer to 4.5. I'm going to lay the points at the Bucks.
Yeah, and they're just such a much more polished team right now. Spurs do seem to have more potential, though. I would argue, especially with that Fox trade on the horizon, Spurs have a better chance to win a championship in the next 5 years than this current iteration of the Bucks. And we talked about the second apron earlier. You know, not a lot they can do to improve this team. You know, it's funny when we were talking those bad contracts in the chat the other day, Noobs, I was going to offer up Chris Middleton. He only makes $30 million a year. So when we go to that second apron rule, right, you're not bringing back. Well, you understand my point, though, right? It's not like that Beal or the Butler. And so that used to not matter as much because you can aggregate. Now that you can't aggregate, not a lot of ways to really improve that team. I think, you know, we talk about all these teams with three big players. They all need a little bit more depth. Five Star, what are your thoughts here when the Bucks travel to face the San Antonio Spurs?
I'm with you guys. I know where I'm betting San Antonio in this game. I just feel like Milwaukee is a far better team. What I will look at is on the prop level, Victor Wembanyama usually plays pretty good against other superstars. He's pretty aware already at a young age that everyone's looking when he plays these guys like Giannis. So I think he'll go over 23.5 points. Last two games, he's been under that. He's at 20 points and 23 points is coming from France and having that big game in Paris for his home crowd. So I think that tonight with everyone watching, this is going to be the prime time matchup. I'm sure it's on ESPN or something tonight. I think he'll go over 23.5. I think that's a pretty short number.
All right. Looks like we both, we all like the Milwaukee Bucks here. We'll see how that turns out. And boy, Noobs, I hope Brisket jumps in the chat today and lets us know what day it is. Because, you know, nothing weird in the NBA ever happens on a Friday night. The Phoenix Suns and Kevin Durant, the scene of the crime. In Golden State, Kevin Durant will probably not receive a very heartwarming welcome back to the city in which he did win championship. But the Suns will take on the Warriors tonight. This is an interesting matchup, man. We got two aging stars, not a lot of depth around them. But they are so great, you know, they're able to really will these teams to be threatening to anybody at any time. And one of the reasons I didn't have a lot to say about that T-Wolves Suns game earlier was because I had my eyes on the Warriors and the Thunder. Now, I took the 9 or 9.5, whatever it ended up at with the Warriors, and I didn't even need it. They went straight up. Just shows you how wild the NBA can be. And when you have a great player like Curry, it's just like anything can happen at any time. Noobs, what are your thoughts here when Kevin Durant returns to Golden State?
Yeah, two teams have been very tough to handicap. Like you said, spread about the Warriors. Not only do you have to worry about whether Curry is going to play, but who is going to play? This is a team that regularly uses 8, 9, 10, 11 guys in a league where you see generally some shorter rosters, but it's the strength of the franchise, the strength of the organization. Kerr and that coaching staff are prepared for this. They have gone through this for years. They know the value of getting those backups minutes so that they're ready for moments like that. At the same time, I look at this Phoenix Suns team, and they are starting to round into form a little bit. I think since Budenholzer was smart enough to adjust the lineup, basically told Yusuf Nurkic to stay home, I don't think we're going to see him play any minutes for the Suns basically for the rest of the season, making the move for Nick Richards, putting Bradley Beal on the bench and bringing Ryan Dunn into the starting lineup, you see a lot more balance. You see some defense here in the first quarters and as they get to start these games. Durant continues to play very, very well for as long as he's healthy. I think Devin Booker is one of the most underrated players in the NBA. Just a really incredible what he can do on both sides of the floor, and someone that I think at some point is really going to be super successful if you don't consider him already to be so. But a really tough game to pick. I sort of lean towards the Phoenix Suns. It's one of those things. They've been very good off losses this year. And you go back and look, basically every time now, you know, if they lose the game outright, I'm talking more from a spread perspective and covering, you know, only beat the Clippers by 2 there. Weren't able to cover that game, lose outright to Minnesota. So coming off that loss, coming off that lack of cover, it's basically been a good spot to back Phoenix. I think they're a better team than Golden State, but kind of like I said at the top, it's hard to handicap this Warriors team and know what to expect. So lean towards the Phoenix Suns, kind of like the under. I think that game actually could be a little bit uglier. You got a lot of big names, but maybe a little more defense than you understand. So lean under, lean Suns. But, man, that's a tough
game. I think it's a tough game as well. Five-star, did you have a play?
Have no play on this one. I'll probably look toward props just for the wagering world, you know, guys tuning in and stuff. I'd probably look at Nick Richards to go over 8.5 points. The Warriors continue to struggle with centers. They've always have. They give up points. That used to be an automatic bet against the Warriors was whoever's the center playing against them to go over. And I think we can go back to that tonight, especially with Nick Richards just getting to Phoenix. He's the new, fresh, hot guy there, and they want to make him happy. It's going to be a prime time matchup. I think he gets some easy baskets. I saw something about that the Warriors starting center, Quinn Post, has given up 16 points per game when guarding other centers this season. That's in the 90th. Percentile.
Well, Noobs, love talking basketball with you today, but we brought you on for your excellent acumen in finding the best Super Bowl props, and you have a lot for us today. Let's start with you, and of course, we'll jump in and we'll talk about what we think of some of your selections. But you have some fun ones here. First offensive play of the game, pass is plus 125, run is minus 165. Run used to be a nice bet for me, but it seems like they've priced it appropriately now, especially with that 40-cent straddle. Where are you going here on the first offensive play of the game?
I like the pass here at plus money. I think the Super Bowl is going to be a game defined by the defenses. You know, we have arguably the best quarterback we've seen in a very long time, someone who's now going to be competing with Tom Brady for that argument as to who the best quarterback is if they can win this game. We have Jalen Hurts, who continues to look better. I was really impressed with how he's able just to, you know, stand and make the throws that he needed to make. He's really been struggling with injuries. But, again, these are two of the best defenses in the NFL, if not the two best defenses. It's incredible what both of these teams can do from a talent perspective, from a scheme perspective. And when I look at from an offensive perspective, what a lot of these teams have done. Now, of course, maybe the Eagles just hand it to Saquon Barkley, but outside of that, the Eagles have thrown the ball to start the last couple of games. The Chiefs as well have been trying to throw the ball a little bit more. I think, again, both these offensive coordinators know these are great defenses and specifically great run defenses. So I think there's good value here in plus 125 for the first play of the game to be a pass.
Yeah, I mean, at minus 165, they've kind of taken the run out of the equation. At minus 135, what I've seen the last couple of years, I thought that was a steal. You know, and this is what happens in these markets. We can't keep playing these edges forever. We constantly have to be looking because the books will adjust their prices. Noops likes the pass there, but boy, when you're coming out the last game where your first offensive play from scrimmage was a 63-yard touchdown on the ground, maybe you want to go back there. What do you think? You going for the pass here?
Even though it's juicy, I think I like the run. Just we've seen Kansas City starts over and over and over and over with runs to Kareem Hunt. They always run the ball on the first play, always. And the Eagles have to because Saquon Barkley deserves the first carry. Look what he did last game. I just think that even though it's juicy, most likely it'll be a run on the first play.
Noops, the next prop you have for us. First turnover of the game is an interception. No, plus 105. Yes, minus 135. I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this one. I'm surprised you put it on here. How do you break this?
Again, you got to go back and look at these quarterbacks. This game will be defined by the defense. Both teams that have been pretty good at turning the ball over, but generally generating fumbles. You know, you see a lot of good guys punching balls out here. You have two quarterbacks in Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes that don't throw interceptions in big games. It just does not happen. If you go back and look for the last couple months, neither has thrown an interception in the playoffs yet, I believe. You go back and look the last few months, neither has thrown an interception in a few months here. Both of them understand the value of this game, understand how close it's going to be, and how important it is not to make big mistakes. So I struggle to see what kind of throw there's going to be. I mean, maybe it's Jalen Hurts pushing the ball downfield to A.J. Brown. The ball gets tipped, something like that. Mahomes, again, maybe loses track of Quinyon Mitchell, something like that. But over and over and again, if there's going to be a turnover in this game, which maybe there isn't, and if there isn't, this ends up pushing, I struggle to see how it's going to be an interception. I think, again, given teams' proclivity to run the ball, that means more chances for fumbles. Given how good these quarterbacks are, that lowers the chances of interceptions for me. I would have the no, honestly, as the favorite here. So I'll go first turnover to be an interception, no, plus 105.
News taking plus money again with the interception prop. Five-star Mahomes did not have the best year when it came to his TD to interception ratio. What do you think about this?
Well, I know that Mahomes hasn't turned the ball over in 9 games. The Chiefs haven't as a whole. So we're going to be looking at and we know how the Eagles play. That's why Hurts really struggles against pressure because he has to see someone open before he lets go of it. He's so worried about throwing an interception, he doesn't really sling it around, man. So I lean with Noobs. I think the best bet might be no turnover in this game. I just was searching for it and I couldn't find it, but I'm sure it's a pretty good number. I'm sure it's a nice number for no turnover at all in this game.
Yeah, all right. We'll look at this one. Hey, this next one, this is really surprising to me, and I wonder if there's some data that supports it. So score in the first 5 minutes, no, minus 135, yes, plus 150. Okay, score in the first 6 minutes, now yes goes down to minus 125. Is there some sort of empirical data that says that everyone scores between the fifth and the sixth minute of the game? How do we approach this one, Noobs? Because I'll take the extra minute for plus 150.
Exactly. It's one of those situations where if you look, I think your average starting drive does tend to be about 5 to 6 minutes. I'm taking the no on both of these. It's one of those bets where, now I tend to make this wager when we have two teams that have never been to the Super Bowl. What you have to remember is the Super Bowl is not a regular football game. You haven't played football in 2 weeks. You come out, you do your warm-ups. The game doesn't start. You got an hour and a half of songs and performances and speeches and planes flying over and all sorts of crazy stuff. These teams tend to start pretty slow. Now, the Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl, obviously, several times. The Eagles have been to the Super Bowl a couple times. So I think both these teams will be ready. My angle instead here is, and it's interesting, going against kind of that bet where I'm going to take the first play to be a pass, both of these teams take their time going down the field. They are not teams that run up to the line and are trying to run a hurry-up offense. Andy Reid loves watching the clock tick. Nick Sirianni loves watching the clock tick. These are two teams, again, I expect to run the ball. The defenses are going to be ready. So I think there's a chance we might not even see a score on the first drive or so. But even if we do, it's going to be, I think, a 6-7 minute drive for the Chiefs and the Eagles to get down the field. So no score first 5 minutes, no score first 6 minutes. I'll happily take both.
All right, Noops is betting on the defenses early on. What do you think, Five Star?
Yeah, I got to back him with that. I feel the same way. One of our favorite bets every year is the under on the first quarter. I forgot how many years we bet it, and we won a large percentage of the time just because it's a feeling out process, and I don't know why. It seems like the NFL puts the first quarter clock on speed. Like, you know, in the NBA, we get so ticked because, like, you catch the ball in basketball, it's like 0.4 and they get off a shot and they say it counts. We all know it's no such thing as a 0.4. It's still 1 second, because only 1 second is just one. It's no way you can get under that, right? So they have the clock running on the regular time, I think, in the first quarter, and then it kind of slows down in the second quarter. So we're gonna go with the under, correlating with what Noob said. I think it's gonna be long drives, no score in the first 5 minutes. Then if they do score, I expect a field goal. And then the next team to get the ball, and either they're going to punt, or if they are threatening, we're going to run out of time when they're right around the 10 or 20. Watch. They're going to run the ball or something, get tackled, and they're going to say, we'll just wait to the quarter. And they're stuck on 3-0 or 7-0 every time. So we're going with the under 9.5. It's at even money right now for the first quarter.
All right. Yeah, I definitely like that one every year. I like this bet too. I have an idea of where you're going to go, because the plus money looks tempting to me here. Will there be a successful 2-point conversion? Yes, plus 230. No, minus 320. And there was a lot of talk last week, you know, in the breakdown of the Bills being so aggressive, going for two early in the game. But unfortunately, I think that trend is here to stay. I actually like the yes here at this price. There's no way I would bet the no. It's yes or pass to me. But my guess is, since this prop is on our sheet, that what we're talking about, Noobs, you're on the yes as well.
Absolutely, spread. And it's one of those things, I don't believe in trap bets, but if there ever was a trap bet, boy, oh boy, this is it. You've got a coach in Nick Sirianni, one of the most aggressive coaches in the league in terms of going for two. You've got a team with the tush push, one of the best short yardage teams in the NFL. And they've got a kicker who can't find his ass from a hole in the ground, basically, this season. Jake Elliott has really struggled. Yeah. As impressed as I was watching him making some of those kicks in that Rams game through the sleet, through the snow, to watch him just get up and biff extra points over and over and over again. He's missed an extra point, I think, in each of the last 3-4 games. So Sirianni knows that. He is definitely nervous about putting Elliott out there to kick. Even for an extra point, he knows the value at two. I think the Eagles, again, and once these open up a little bit more, there'll probably be prices on, will the Eagles get a 2-point conversion? Will the Chiefs get a 2-point conversion? I'll play this yes for both teams and definitely go try to find an Eagles number. Now, the Chiefs, a little bit more conservative. Andy Reid, more of an old school guy, likes to kick extra points, but also understands the value of going for two. If for some reason the Eagles get a lead, Reid tends to be a little bit more aggressive here. So I am just blown away that this number is plus 230. I'm going to take the bet. You know, I'll take the bait on this one. Give me a yes, it'll be a 2-point conversion for plus 230.
Yeah, that seems mispriced to me. I would think that if I were to price that line, I'd be putting it between plus 150 and plus 175. Obviously, you know, you need the conversion attempts to sit there, but you know, I think you could put 2-point conversion attempts at 2.5. So you're telling me 1-3 is not going to go? Five Star, what do you
think? I'm backing you guys on that. There's no way that I wouldn't take plus on it. You got so many different ways that you can get to this happening, whether it's a team, you know, getting behind even. Like, what if a team gets ahead and in the fourth quarter trying to catch up? They're going to, of course, go for 2 points. So, man, that's a value bet. You got to take it. And I'm going to actually tell my clients to bet it right now, as long as it's at that price. It's 3-1. That's ridiculous.
All right, Noobs. If I was more prepared, I would have had a visual aid here with some bread and some butter, because we're here for your bread and butter first touchdown scorer on the list. I see Xavier Worthy, Marquise Brown, Dallas Goedert, Patrick Mahomes, and Grant Calcaterra. Talk to me about why you like these selections.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite bets in sports. Definitely my favorite NFL bet. Who's going to score the first touchdown? Because they're really, folks, there's only maybe one game a year that doesn't have a touchdown. I think maybe we had two this season, but someone is going to score. And if someone's going to score, someone's going to score first. That's just how the word first works, people. And from a value perspective, I would rather focus on this market. Now, I see what Five Star is going to talk about here later, some of these anytime touchdown bets. I like those, but that price, those prices tend to be tied to how many touchdowns you expect in the game. So as you start to basically go through this, I tend to find there's a little more value getting that first touchdown because I'm just more sure there's going to be at least one instead of trying to, you know, bet something that's tied to maybe three or four touchdowns. Now, one other thing I will say, what I do in these situations is anyone who doesn't score the first touchdown, I will go back in live and basically take their anytime, which you tend to see there as the prices get much, much better. But as I look at these games, two of the teams that are pretty concentrated offensively speaking. You look at the Eagles, basically their first touchdowns come from Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts, or maybe A.J. Brown. There really isn't a lot of other guys that sneak in there except Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert has been one of Jalen Hurts' favorite targets throughout his career over the last few years. We forgot about him a little bit this year. He missed about 4 or 5 weeks with an injury. Since he's been back, he's basically tied with A.J. Brown in terms of targets, has more red zone targets than A.J. Brown, and goes against a Chiefs defense that, while is one of the best in the league, you can't stop everything. Every defense gives up something, and the Chiefs gives up throws to tight ends. This has been a thing for years. Spagnuolo defenses have really struggled to cover guys in the middle of the field. That's why I like Dallas Goedert. Again, his number, I'm looking right around 18-1. There's even some 20-1s you can find. I think that's a real nice number. And Grant Calcaterra, you might not know who he is. He's the backup tight end in Philadelphia, and he is one of the few guys that, now, the targets aren't quite there, but he is on the field. He plays about 50% of snaps here. I think they're going to need him a lot, not only to block, but also to be part of the offense here. He's 80-1 to score the first touchdown. And again, given the matchup, I like both of those quite a bit. As for the Chiefs, we'll start with Patrick Mahomes. He's around 20-1 to score the first touchdown. We see it every postseason. Write this down, folks. It's going to happen again next year, the year after that, or the year after that, etc. Quarterbacks run more in the playoffs. We are in must-win football situations, folks. We are not trying to save ourselves from injury. We are not trying to keep ourselves healthy for the long run. No, this is about doing what you need to do to win the game. We saw last week in the conference championship, Mahomes ran the ball a lot, scored a touchdown himself. And I think, again, at 20-1, there's good value that an Eagles defense that's going to be ready for Pacheco, is going to be ready for Kareem Hunt, is going to be ready for Travis Kelce, Noah Gray, and all those guys. Mahomes is going to have a chance to scramble it in. Again, given some of the injuries, too, the Eagles have, it's going to be tough for them to spy. So Mahomes has scored the first touchdown, 20-1. And then two wide receivers on the Chiefs, the two most dynamic athletic players that they have. Andy Reid does save his best plays for this time of the year, and we've seen it, especially with Xavier Worthy the last couple weeks, and even Marquise, or as you might know him, Hollywood Brown. They lead the team in targets here. Now, the Eagles' pass defense is great. We've seen Cooper DeJean, Darius Slay, and Quinyon Mitchell lock down guys pretty much all season, but they have struggled with speed receivers. Go back and look what Terry McLaurin did to this team in three games this season. I think we're going to see a lot of plays like that for Brown and Worthy. I expect them to get the targets early, not Travis Kelce. I don't care if Taylor Swift is there cheering them on. Andy Reid wants to score points. If he wants to do that, it's going to be getting the ball to those two guys. So, again, give me Xavier Worthy. Give me Marquise Brown, Pat Mahomes, Dallas Goedert, and Grant Calcaterra all to score the first touchdown. And whoever doesn't score first, go ahead live. Grab them then anytime. Touchdown score. You're going to get some great numbers.
And I like that you're going a little bit off the beaten path, Noobs. I mean, it doesn't take much for me to jump on here and say I'll take Saquon Barkley as the first TD score. And I think that those ones are priced appropriately, and how you've done really well in the market is finding some of these more long shot guys. And I think that's where the value really is. Five Star, anything to add there on first?
yeah, we could just segue straight to my anytime touchdowns. As he said, he's the first touchdown guy. I like the anytime touchdown. We got a really sweet number on Patrick Mahomes at plus 460. Like, come on. I'd even bet two and probably hit for the 1,100. It might be 1,100 or plus 1,500. I can't remember which one I saw. As Noob said, it's do or die time. And what a lot of people forget, because Mahomes works so well from the pocket, he's so cerebral, he likes to run Andy Reid's offense. That's what makes him so good, man, because he could play like Brady, but then he can also switch up if he has to and play like Josh Allen. He has that type of talent. He has more strength than people realize. That's why he keeps that dad bod. Just for that extra oomph that he needs to stiff arm a DB. He can shake a linebacker a lot faster than he looks. We just really take for granted how special athletically that Patrick Mahomes is, and he always runs in the Super Bowl. We've seen it time and time again. You can go back, had 11 rushes for 43 yards and 2 touchdowns last week. Also the 3-time Super Bowl winner, got in the end zone in the divisional round against the Bills in 2021. He had another one in the 2020 divisional round. He also scored in the playoffs 4 other times in his career. I just think that he's going to run one in this one. If he gets the chance, the opportunity, if it's one of those plays, they've been running a lot of the play action and where he rolls out, where he has an option to either hit it in the flats or keep it himself. I've been seeing them run that a lot this year in the playoffs, and I think that Mahomes gets us one touchdown with his feet. So anytime touchdown for Mahomes at the plus 460 is just too much value for me to pass up. Xavier Worthy, everyone knows that that kid is a touchdown Mac. He's going to soon be one of those guys that you're looking for in fantasy every year. He's assumed the W1 position right now for him just because of all the injuries. I think Rashee Rice will soon be their W1, and then he'll go to more being a gadget guy and the second receiver. But right now, he's the first option. Mahomes trusts him a lot. Last week, he had 6 catches on 7 targets for 85 yards and a touchdown. In the regular season, he scored 6 touchdowns, 59 receptions on 98 targets. So that means Mahomes really trusts him, looks at him a lot. He had 98 targets this season. That's really good for a rookie, man. Also, we got to remember he's a dual threat guy as well, because Andy Reid has shown before, like against Houston, he scored on a sweep. They like to get him the ball in a lot of different ways. So we got a chance of him running the ball as well. And another one, Jalen Hurts, anytime touchdown is automatic to me. Like, especially in a game like this, this is the Super Bowl. He lost 2 years ago. He's going to try to prove himself this Super Bowl. We're going to see a really good game by Jalen Hurts. He's going to be extra hyped for this one, man, because he came so close to beating Mahomes last year. Hurts, man, at even money is a steal. 14 rushing touchdowns during the regular season. 4 already just in 2 playoff games, including 3 last week. The tush push is the most unstoppable play to ever come to the NFL. And the reason why, we were talking about it this morning on ESPN 97.5. Lance Erline was asking me, why do I think that Josh Allen was unable to do it? And the reason why is because all of us are about 6 foot. We're all about the same height. Jalen Hurts and I, eye to eye, I've met him before. He's about the same height as us, guys. He's a 6 foot guy, but he squats 700 pounds. So he's able to get real low and into that line and push, and then he has the tight end behind him. With that power he has from all that squatting, he can get low. He's not a target. Only thing they're catching is shoulder pads and hips when he, you know, does the tush push. Unstoppable. Josh Allen, on the other hand, yeah, he's big and strong, but he's got a lot to hit. He's 6'5". Not good for tall quarterbacks doing these sneaks. That's why, remember, Mahomes got hurt on it. Now I think it's in his contract. He doesn't do quarterback sneaks anymore. So Jordan Love doesn't do quarterback sneaks anymore. Matt LaFleur is smart enough to bring the tight end in the motion, let Kraft take the snap and do the sneak. So I think Jalen Hurts is an unstoppable force on this, and somehow they're going to get by the goal line. We've seen before, if Sirianni's 3 yards and in, he'll push it 3 straight times if he have to. So I think that Jalen Hurts gets in there for any time touchdown. Also correlating with Patrick Mahomes being on the ground, over 29.5 rushing yards is a gimme to me. Like, he might get that on one run if the defense breaks down, right? He ran for 38 yards and 44 yards the 2 times that he faced the Eagles. The Eagles are also a team that gives up a lot of yards to running quarterbacks as well, man. So that's something to keep an eye on. Also, I like Patrick Mahomes' longest rush to be over 12 yards. He's covered this number in both the playoff victories and in his last four games as well. 22-yard run against the 49ers in Super Bowl 58, 26-yard run against the Eagles, Super Bowl 57. So I would not be surprised if we see Patrick Mahomes use his legs more in this one spread. Last prop for me with Patrick Mahomes, you got to go to the Super Bowl MVP. It's plus 105. If they win, who are they going to give it to? The only other guy I could see is maybe Kelsey if he have a monster game. But with C.J. Gardner-Johnson and DeJean and those guys, I don't see them giving up a big game to Kelsey. I don't think Kelsey has a monster game. I don't think that the Eagles let him go off. I think that Mahomes is that guy, and he's going to Disney again if they win. So plus 105 is a give me. Team with the first touchdown pass. KC is minus 165. It's juicy, but we just talked about the Eagles run the ball, especially near the goal line. They're going to run Hurts. They're going to run Barkley. So if it's a touchdown pass in this game, the first one will most likely be for Mahomes hitting one of his receivers. And my last prop to wrap up our long list of props for the wagering world is DeAndre Hopkins, the veteran, to have over 1.5 receptions. He had only one last week. This is his first trip to the Super Bowl. I know that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are those type of guys that understand moments, and they understand that DeAndre Hopkins has played football a really long time on some really tough, bad teams, to be on some tough seasons that he had to endure. Always been a professional, always been a good player. I think that he can get two receptions in the Super Bowl, especially with the limited use that he had last week. So give me DeAndre Hopkins spread to go over 1.5 receptions.
All right. Final thoughts on the Super Bowl before we give out some picks for this weekend.
Noobs.
Yeah.
Anything else you got for again, us?
Yeah, as I've said before, I think this is a game that's going to be defined by defense. Now, that doesn't mean I'll be taking an under. It's just which team is going to blink first here. And at the end of the day, I think the biggest mismatch on the field is not actually going to be guys that are on the field. It's Andy Reid versus Nick Sirianni. Nick Sirianni is, I don't think, nearly as bad of a coach as the people in Philadelphia seem to think. You know, you listen to talk radio out here, it's unbelievable some of the stuff they say about him. But he is not nearly as good as Andy Reid. Andy Reid is on the precipice of becoming one of the best coaches in NFL history. It's incredible what he's done, how he knows and understands these moments, how he builds out towards success. And one of the most important things, the Chiefs don't blow leads, man. They get a lead, they grind those games out. Reid knows how to do that. And I think really that's going to be the defining matchup. If Kansas City makes maybe a mistake or two, the Eagles will be able to take advantage. But I got to go with Andy Reid. Give me the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Noobs, final question for you. Knowing you for a long time, you are a diehard 76ers fan. And when it comes to Eagles, you can kind of take it or leave it. At this point in your life, are you regretting that choice? As the Eagles are this well-run organization, best team in football, great general manager, and the Sixers, well, they're the Sixers. Are you regretting the choice, and you feel bad for not really putting your heart into this Eagles team?
Well, Spread, I would say, to maybe even take it a bigger question, not that I decided to be a Sixers fan. I was born like this. I don't know if lobotomies work or whatever that thing was, that Jim Carrey movie, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But if I could have anything removed from here, it would be my Sixers fandom. It is a deep, irrational thing. And Spread, I definitely think it's some sort of cruel, universal, tragic joke that the Phillies have won a World Series. The Flyers have been to the Stanley Cup. The Eagles have won the Super Bowl and been to the Super Bowl a couple times. In my lifetime, the Sixers haven't even gotten close. It's tough. What I will say is I'm excited that this is finally Tyrese Maxey's team. He's the guy, and that's really what gives me hope. So I'm really upset that you had to ask me that question, but I will finish with a story. No matter what happens with the Eagles, it's tough. I love Eagles fans. I really do. I love the city of Philadelphia, but here's a little story for you. One of my friends is down at the Jersey Shore during the summer. My friend, of course, an adult, sees a small kid wearing a New York Giants Saquon Barkley jersey. This is shortly after Saquon joined the Eagles. My friend, again, an adult, a full-grown man, takes it upon himself to walk up to this young boy and say, "Are you excited to watch him play for a winner?" At which point, the young man's father snaps at my friend and goes, "What is wrong with you Eagles fans? You're the third adult today to come up to my son and say some shit." How could I want to be included in a group
and
of people
that
behave
like
this?
And that's why you are the Eagles fan.
I don't want to be associated. I don't need to be included with that group of people. I'm sorry. With all due respect, You guys are great. The three greatest days in the history of Philadelphia are the signing of the Declaration of Independence, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, and the signing of the Constitution, in that order. The crime goes down, folks. When the Philadelphia Eagles win games, crime goes down in the city of Philadelphia. So, for the city, for everyone I know, I hope the Eagles win. I'm not betting on it.
All right, and that's a great breakdown there. And one thing that we have in common is just inept basketball teams that we continue to support for no rational reason.
I guess we could be Hornets fans. It can't get much worse.
I know you have some picks for us here because I know you did a BetUS show earlier today. What's your favorite bet tonight for our ball and parlay?
Yeah, I think it's the Milwaukee Bucks. You take that 2.5 points. You take the money line if you want. Be a little more conservative going to that parlay. But the Bucks are going to win that game. They really are. I don't see Giannis letting down. And maybe not a parlay piece, but put a little sprinkle on Giannis to have a triple-double. I'm seeing that like 7-8-1. That's going to be a really nice bet.
All right, looking forward to that one. Five-star, what's your favorite play for this week?
We're going to go with Purdue. First half and game. Let's go to first half for our biggest play, -6.5. Purdue has been a juggernaut in the first half. They have a first half margin on teams of +5.5. That's even been greater in the last three games. This has been +12 points in the first half. And at home, they're +13 points that they average in the first half margin against teams. Indiana, as I said, is going the opposite direction. Indiana is about even in the first half all year with all their opponents. I just don't think that they have the defense to slow down the type of offense that Purdue likes to run at home. I think they're going to get a lot of easy transition buckets, and I think that Indiana will turn the ball over. So give me Purdue first half -6.5, and for the game -12.
A quick breakdown for me today. I didn't really have a time to dive into it deep, so I just ran some numbers. Give me the under in the Nuggets and the 76ers tonight. Right now it's at 233.5. I got that about 3 points.
All right. I appreciate that. You got Noop saying roll with the Bucks, and we got spread from his parents' house. So we get a little bad signal, but hopefully you guys were able to pick up everything he said. He said that he's going with the under on his game. You heard me. I'm going with Purdue first half and for the game. A little bit on what Noop said. We'll break it down some more next week. Everyone says Sirianni is a bad coach, but he's 5-1 with extra prep time. The only loss, guess to who? Andy Reid in Super Bowl 57. The OG is 30-7 with extra prep time. So a really great Super Bowl on the horizon. We'll break it down for you some more next week on the Super Bowl edition of the Wagering World. Noops, anything for the people before we get out of here? And tell them where they can find you at on the internet, man.
Yeah, as always, in the Twitterverse at _Noops, always talking hoops. It's a never-ending pile of basketball. We just love it. Plenty of tennis going on. We'll be firing out picks whenever I can there. And, of course, we've got one more football game. And especially for people having parties, make sure you check out. I'll be putting out a prop sheet. Now, this is more of a party thing. There's a lot of gambling prop sheets you can find. Mine includes questions about which commercial is going to happen after each time break. We're going to have questions about what people are wearing at halftime, things like that. So if you're having a party, you've got a group of people that maybe aren't as gambling forward as we are here in the wagering world, it's just a great tool to get everybody involved and have some fun. Make sure you keep an eye on that. I'll be posting that probably Tuesday this week.
Make sure you send it to me, Noops, not only for my party at home with my wife, mother-in-law, and grandmother-in-law, and kids, and a couple of friends that are going to come by, but also just to retweet to all of the guys in the wagering world and ladies in the wagering world so they can have it, access to it as well. Anything for the people before we get out of this spread?
Man, I'm excited. Thanks for coming on, Noops. Good for us to catch up. Good to see my good friend again, and hopefully I get everything taken care of and we can do some more content together.
That's great. Congratulations to Spread. Spread is just successful.
Not yet. We're still in the process. That's why. Yeah. Not yet.
He just purchased a brand new estate.
Yeah. It's not hopefully, often when you can be a million years old and move in with your parents, folks.
Yeah. Spread is so built, man. Congratulations, though, Spread, getting 40 acres of land in Lake Tahoe. Hey, man, as always, this show is dedicated to the greatest Houston sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad, for my guy, Alex Noops Christensen, that you can find on BetUS and also on X, for my guy, Spread the Stare. This is the Wager World. We'll see you guys next week.